You're listening to Interested Anthony. I'm your host, Anthony Huhulis, and today, my guest is Evans Caglidge. Today, my guest, a very special guest, is a photographer by trade. For 40 years, he's worked for the Dallas Morning News, first as a senior staff photographer, then as a photo editor from January 2015 to January 2019. He's photographed everyone from Harrison Ford to Dennis Quaid, Halle Berry, Naomi Campbell, Johnny Versace. He's covered Fashion Week. He covers food. He covers portraits. And I think you described yourself as a documentary photographer. For those that don't know, because I hear documentary and I think of documentary filmmaking, what is a documentary photographer?
Well, to me, a documentary photographer is just someone that goes out and tells stories, usually for publication, but, you know, not always. But, I like to tell stories with my photos. Believe it or not, I was actually talking to a friend of mine last night, and we were reminiscing about some old stories. I did this would have been back in the really early 80s. I did a story on a street preacher, you know, a guy that would just go out at night and preach the word. He usually had two or three students from theological school down here in Dallas with him. We were in, you know, those parts of towns, you know, that you don't really see people like me there unless they're there for no good.
Do you find that people tend to leave the photographer alone, or does it attract attention when you go to bad parts of town?
Well, yeah, it varies. It kind of depends on what you're there for. And, I was telling him the story, the funny part on that very story I was telling you about the street preacher. You know, we were down with some of the prostitutes, where he was praying with them. And a young guy comes up in a car, he kind of looks at me, and, you know, street preacher says, you know, he's the pimp, you know, he's the guy that is the pimp here. So, but, you know, it's fine. Don't worry. He's not going to be dangerous or anything. And at that point, he immediately, you know, points a gun at me. He had a revolver. And he said, you're not going to take my picture, right? And I said, of course not. I'm here to photograph him, you know, pointing at the preacher. Mm-hmm. He goes, okay, that's fine. You know, and I mean, and he was kind of smiling the whole time. You know, I never felt in any danger by that. You know, it was all, it was just his little way of saying, okay, you're not going to take a picture of me, right? Mm-hmm. But it turns out that he really didn't want his family had no idea what he was doing. They thought he was working at a McDonald's down the street, which he was. But he did this on the side. Wow. He ran into all kinds, you know?
Yeah. Are there any stories that maybe on the opposite end of the spectrum where you came out of it feeling maybe a new perspective or changed, or someone you interacted with affected you in a way that you didn't think was going to happen going into a shoot?
Yeah. Oh, definitely, for sure. When I photographed Mr. Versace, that was at his house in New York. He had several. The one in Milan, which I'd been in also. He had the one in Miami where he was shot. And the one in New York, which he had just finished redoing, remodeling, building it. And the agreement, I made that photograph for American Airlines In-Flight magazine. And the agreement was that I couldn't really show the house because they had promised, I think it was Harper's Bazaar, the first crack at, you know, doing photos of the house, that story. So, you know, and I wasn't there to show the house. I just wanted his portrait. But it was difficult scheduling-wise because it was during Fashion Week. And, you know, I had shows and he had shows, and it was just kind of a mess. When we got all set up and, you know, they went and got him, and, you know, he comes out, he gives me this really stern look. He He goes, "I'm mad at you." And I said, "Why?" He says, "You made me get up at 4 o'clock in the morning." This was like 7 o'clock when we were getting around to shooting it. Because I at 9 o'clock, I had to be at Ralph Lauren for a fashion show. And I said, "Oh, sorry." But, you know, before I could apologize, he started laughing. You know, it was a joke. You know, it was just his little joke. So that kind of put me at ease, you know, because I was not at ease with him. You know, he was such a force that I was just not at ease with him. So I pick up the camera to start shooting, and, you know, he kind of went, "Ah," you know, and he starts pointing at my camera because, you know, as soon as I got my lens, my camera up to my eye, it was like, oh, hell, the lens cap is still on the camera. So I said, "Yeah, I got up at 4 o'clock in the morning, too." So we both laughed and got some nice photos. Everybody, you know, everybody's just a person. You know, that I kind of especially realized that. I think the strongest effect on me would have been an event as opposed to a person. But, you know, I was in New York on 9/11 shooting fashion shows. So, you know, I got pressed into duty to go cover that. And, you know, I was down in the area when the second tower fell, you know, and had to run from the cloud dust that was coming at us. And, you know, and seeing that and seeing everything following up that and all those people, you know, all over the streets, you know, with signs that they made, you know, pictures of their loved ones, you know, "Have you seen this person?" And, you know, Tower 1, 47th floor, you know, whatever, where they were. You know, so that was kind of heartbreaking. So,
what does it feel like to be a photographer in those situations? Because I've heard there was a photograph I saw of, I think it was a starving child in Africa, and it won some award. And the photographer had a quote saying of how he wishes he could have done something to help the child because the child was dying in front of him, but all he could do is take the photo. What is it like taking a photo of a situation like that?
Yeah, well, I think in situations like that, you know, the best thing you could do to help is to take the photo, you know, which brings awareness. You know, like with starving children, you can't, you know, just all of a sudden start feeding them, you know, because that could do more harm than good. They have to be nurtured properly, you know, by medical personnel at that point. But, you know, I remember photographer, AP photographer Nick Utt, he shot that kind of famous photo of the Vietnamese girl running away from the napalm in Vietnam during the war. So yeah, he did the photos as he was coming, but you know, as soon as she got close, you know, he took her and put her in whatever vehicle he had and took her straight to the hospital. You know, and he still knows her today, and they're good friends. They're both of them are living in Los Angeles, and you know, they're good friends.
So going back to the Versace photo shoot, after that experience, when maybe you started to feel more comfortable in high pressure photo shoot situations, how did your time in the business, enjoyment of those high pressure photo shoots change? Did you find them easier? Did you find each one came with their own challenges?
Well, I think they all had their own challenges, but they all had very similar answers, you know, to those challenges. You know, it was, you had to find out what kind of time frame you were going to have, as you know, with the celebrities, especially you're on a limited time. You know, they're not in Dallas just to be photographed by me. They're in Dallas to be photographed by, you know, everybody in town. You know, all the TV stations have interviews. A lot of times there's radio interviews, you know. I mean, you usually go to them in a hotel room or a suite or somewhere, you know, wherever they've set all that up. But yeah, there's always a time limit. So you kind of, knowing that, you got to be as prepared as possible going into it. You want them, you know, as soon as they walk into the room to be able to sit down, you've already got the shot worked out. You've already got the lights set up, you know, and you just start working. And I would always would just talk, you know. I found quite often, you know, like with Harrison Ford is a good example. You know, he walked in and he was a little shocked because he was in a bedroom doing a phone radio interview. And when he walked into the suite, you know, I had taken the painting down off the wall and moved some furniture around. And, you know, he just kind of looked around, you know, and I immediately said, don't worry, I'll put it all back. And he goes, oh, it's all right. You know, so I had it set up. And you know, as soon as I picked up the camera, you know, he starts talking to me. He goes, oh, I've been thinking about buying that camera. You know, what do you think of it? You know, I said, I loved his camera. You know, it was a full frame Canon digital camera. I just have full frame cameras because that's the way I see, you know. So we talked about the camera, you know, and when that finished, you know, and I'm shooting while all this is going on. Mm-hmm. And when that finished, I, you know, talked about seeing his son years ago at a fashion show. He was on the runway at a fashion show in L.A., and he was in the audience, and you know, just to make a little connection about something, you know, pleasant experience. You know, with Dennis Quaid, you know, when I photographed him, he had just gotten, it was right after one of the hurricanes in Houston, where his parents live, you know, and I knew his parents were there. So, you know, I asked him, you know, how they survived all that. And, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, growing up in Houston and the hurricanes and, you know, all those problems and how his parents were, you know, dealing with it and, you know, that everything was fine and thanks for asking, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah, it went great after that, you know. A lot of times it's just talk and things will present themselves, you know, that you, subjects, you know, they'll usually, you'll pick up on something they said that of their interest, you know. Mm-hmm. Hardly ever talk about whatever movie it is they're trying to promote, which is why they're there. That's the writer's job. That's not mine. My job is to make a photo, you know. And I think one of my favorite ones, and I wish this film is completely lost. It was in files at the Morning News, but early on in my career, I had the pleasure to photograph Audrey Hepburn.
Wow.
And she was in town doing a play, believe it or not, late in her career. And, you know, she was in a room and they had all the photographers sitting outside and we all went in one at a time to take a photo. And I wish I could remember. It's definitely 80s, you know, maybe the middle 80s, but early 80s probably. And, you know, I was the only one with lights. You know, so, but because of the time restriction, I had to put the lights on the stands and everything ready to go. And so, I just walked in with the camera and the lights and everything and did the photos. And at the end of it, she thanked me. She said, well, thank you very much for the photos. I said, well, it was my pleasure. And she goes, no, I really mean it. Thank you. I said, I'm not sure what you mean. You know, she goes, you're the only one that brought lights. And I know that makes a big difference. I know it makes me look better. You know, and of course, what can I say? But, you know, you don't look bad with or without lights. Yeah, I did learn one thing from her because I asked her, you know, she was the way she was posing, you know, she was very, very stiff and she was leaning forward. And I said, that, you know, that doesn't look very comfortable. I said, why are you doing that? She goes, well, it gives you a better shoulder line. It makes your neck look longer. So, and I've used that ever since, you know, when I'm talking to people, I say, all right, make your back really stiff from the waist, lean forward. Don't arch your back, keep it straight. And then raise your chin a little bit. And there's Audrey Hepburn right there. Bam, shoot the picture. And it really works. It really will make you look better. And it takes care of double chins too. You know, a lot of people, you know, posing like this when they have double chins, you know, and I'm not that tall. So, you know, I'm looking up somebody's nose when they're doing that. So I said, do this instead, because you're lifting and it tightens up under the neck, but you're still looking straight, you know. It really works. Yeah, I got to thank her for that. you always try to make the person look as good as you can, regardless.
Yeah. But on that point, I wanted to ask you before, do you take it as part of your job to put your subject at ease, or do you feel it's better to capture something and not necessarily put your subject at ease prior to the shoot?
No, I will always try to put my subject at ease because, you know, not doing so it's just not honest to me. Because if they're not at ease, it's because of you and your camera. You know, and if you and your camera weren't there, you know, they would be at ease. Mm-hmm. I will definitely, you know, try to calm people down. Nervousness shows up in a photo, as you know, Anthony. That's something I try to get over. And in the past, you know, when it just hasn't worked, what I've discovered is the more photos you take, that I guess is they're just kind of getting bored with the whole process at that point. They let down, you know, and then they're at ease. And, you know, that's one thing that's easy to do with digital cameras. But, you know, in the old days with film, when I saw somebody was really, really nervous before, you know, I sat down and, you know, got them sitting down or standing in a spot and we're going to take a picture, I would just start shooting, you know, and they'd either hear the click of the camera or the lights going off, you know, whatever the situation was. And I'd shoot. As soon as I see they start to, you know, kind of get comfortable or, you know, not so nervous anymore, you know, then I'd say, oh, I got to change film. And then bam, I'm putting in the very first roll of film. Because all that time I wasn't taking photos. I was just pretending to.
When you're going into like one of those high pressure photo shoots, around the photo shoot, as you kind of hinted at earlier, oftentimes you're managing not only egos, but managing publicists and business orders and whatnot. How do you balance your sanity in that sort of work environment?
Gosh, I just learned to accept it, that's just the way it is. The hard part was, you know, when there were people on set that weren't publicists and they weren't, you know, part of the subject's crew, they were part of my crew, so to speak, that would get in the way sometimes. And that was always the hard part. We always used to kind of separate the interview from the photo session. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, I got around to getting my, you know, oftentimes, especially early on, you had 30 minutes, right? So 25 minutes went to the interview, 5 minutes for the photo. All right. So you get your 5 minutes at the end of the thing. And the writer keeps asking questions, you know, while you're shooting. And, you know, that just makes the subject have their mouth in a funny position when you're trying to do a portrait, you know, where you're trying to take any kind of photo, you know, you don't want people talking during that. There were more than one situation where, you know, I had to tell a writer to, you had your time, shut up.
And I have to imagine you find yourself in a lot of uncomfortable positions, to say the least. What was the story with Halle Berry, where you were in the bathtub trying to take a photo?
Well, you know, at that time, we had the Dallas Sporting News, and there was a secondary publication that came out as a tab. It was a tab. And Quick was the name of it. And, you know, it was just sort of something geared towards a younger audience, and, you know, it didn't have the hard news in it that the regular newspaper did. And, you know, so she would have been used as the cover photo for that. But I had to have a separate photo for the newspaper proper and a separate one for Quick. So I explained that to her ahead of time, and she said, okay, that's fine. So, you know, we set up and did the shot. And I did take an assistant with me, it was another photographer that was there to help me. Because, you know, we needed to move lights and get things set up very, very quickly. And again, took down the painting off the wall because, you know, hotel suite paintings are not very pretty. So I took that down, and then, you know, looking for a clean spot, I decided I wanted to put her kind of in the entryway, the foyer of the room. And because, you know, she could get in the corner, lean against the corner, and, you know, be a completely different photo than the sitting pose that I had for the first one. Mm-hmm. So once I got her in there and the light in there, well, there was no room for anybody else, including me, the camera. So I went into the bathroom. We just opened the door. And again, wanting to use a longer lens, not a wide angle, I had to get back into far back corner of the room, which meant that I was standing in the bathtub leaning against the back corner. But it worked out.
I have kind of a little bit of a offbeat question. And this was actually the first question that I had come up with for you. If money was no object and time was abundant, which style of photography, other than what you've done, would you like to try? It could be anything from daguerreotypes to pictorialism. Is there anything throughout photography history that ever struck you as, I wish I could try that?
Well, I guess, I mean, you know, doing tintypes, I think would be a lot of fun. I might change my mind once I started doing them, because I mean, there's a lot of serious chemistry going on there, but, if time and money were no object, I would really like to get into landscape photography and just kind of travel around the world to, just shoot landscapes, do things that I haven't done before. And I think a big part of that is going to places I haven't been to before as well. Mm-hmm. That would be a lot of fun.
How much does I know it sounds like an obvious question, but how much of a good photograph is in front of the camera and how much of it is the hands on the camera?
Wow. I guess it would depend on the kind of photo that we're talking about. I don't know if you've seen that photo from Milwaukee the first night of protest or second night of the protest going on, where there's a guy walking past a burning building with the American flag. Yeah, obviously that's in front of the camera, but he or she saw that coming and got themselves into a position. And, you know, as soon as that person walked by that hotspot of the flame where they would show through, because it would be a totally different picture, you know, two steps later when they were in front of a dark part of the building. Mm-hmm. So, that's still the photographer that did that, you know, caught that moment. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been described as the decisive moment. A lot of what I've done in the past with the studio, doing all studio photography and product shots and food and fashion and stuff. Well, you know, that's everything's completely set up for the photo. Mm-hmm. You know, we do our best to stay true and honest because it is a newspaper. So like the food photos, for example, it's real food. It's really ice cream. It's, you know,
it's not glue and
not fake ice cream, you know, you learn the tricks, you know, with mm-hmm. with real ice cream. You, if it's going to be a scoop, you scoop it and then you put it in, with dry ice, and let it sit there for a while. And then you pull it out and shoot it because you get this hard crust on it, but it completely looks natural. But then when it starts to melt, it goes fast, but it lasts longer, you know, just because it was in dry ice.
Wow.
So, yeah, those pictures are completely made up and created. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, when you're out doing documentary work or journalistic work, it's still, you know, I mean, there are those situations where, something just jumps up in front of you, you push the button, and that's it. But most of the time, I think the photographer has thought about it or sees it coming and puts themselves into a position. You know, even with sports photography, you know, if you're on the sideline of a football game, those guys at the sidelines of those Patriot games, you know, they're they're not just standing there waiting for something to happen. They know the game, they understand it, just like the players that are saying, well, you know, there's got to be a pass. So they're going to put themselves into a position to get a pass photo. So yeah, it's still the hands behind the camera, I think, almost always, you know, the rare exceptions.
There's a great quote. I'm going to butcher it, but Heifetz, the great violinist, was once told by some lady after a show, oh, your violin sounds so beautiful. And he holds it up to his ear and goes, funny, I don't hear anything. And it seems so applicable to photography.
Right. Well, I'll tell you a story also. A friend of mine that was assisting Irving Penn as a photographer in New York. Now, I knew him as a runway photographer. You know, he was just one of the guys shooting runway. But earlier in his career, you know, he was assisting Irving Penn, who had, you know, multiple assistants. And they had a couple of models in the studio, and they had set up the lights, and everybody was just waiting for, you know, Irving Penn to show up. And one of the models who apparently wanted to get into photography was just kind of wandering around and wandered into his office. And he had a notebook there. And in his notebook was a diagram of all his shoots, you know, the lighting diagram, the camera positions, you know, all the information, everything, how the photo was done or will be done, was all written in his book. And she was kind of just sitting there enthralled by this, you know, looking through it. And when he comes walking in, of course, she's very apologetic. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to look at this. I want to be a photographer, you know, and I saw this sitting there and, you know, I just had to look at it. His reply to her was, you know, well, if you think that's where the photo is, you'll never make it.
Getting back to, on the flip side, the documentary photography, just thinking back to, you know, images of like the Rebel Sharpshooter and other Civil War images where manipulation was first starting to come into documentary photography. What are your thoughts on truth versus manipulation or alteration in documentary photography? And were there any times where your integrity was confronted maybe early on in your career with that?
No, not at all. I mean, I think that, you know, manipulation in documentary photography is not allowed. You know, it shouldn't be allowed. If you do it, then it should be clearly labeled as such.
Are there any pet peeves that when you get around other photographers, you can just vent about?
Gosh, I hear a lot from other photographers that it's not really my pet peeve. The one I hear a lot from different people, from certain people, and a friend of mine who's a photographer down in Houston had the perfect response to this that I've used ever since I heard it. But some people are always talking about gear, you know. Well, you know, if I had that lens, or, you know, this lens is no good, that lens is better, this camera, that brand, you know, well, you can take a better picture because your camera costs $5,000 and mine's only, you know, $1,200, you know, and I'll say it's just a box with a hole in it. I mean, what you make out of it is, there are people out there that can have a $5,000 camera that will not make as good a photo as a really talented photographer on an iPhone.
So I wanted to ask, you know, when people think of Fashion Week, they think of the showy stuff, the glamour, the models, the celebrities, all that. But as someone who works Fashion Week, what does that look like leading up to it, during it? What is it actually like behind the scenes of a Fashion Week?
Well, when I first started, a lot of the photography was still being done on the side of the runway. So I don't know if you see old photos or old film footage or something, where all the photographers are lined up along the sides of the runway and the models coming down the middle and the people are sitting outside. Well, there was still that going on. And but there was also a move, you know, where it was just starting, where photographers were putting themselves at the end of the runway. That took over very quickly because, you know, when you're on the side of the runway, you're shooting up at a model, it's an awkward angle, and, you know, the lights are up there, so you're shooting straight into the lights as a background. There was an Italian photographer named Bruno Rinaldi who just died this year, was kind of credited for being the first guy to walk back to the end of the room, you know, with a large lens. But the more and more people that started doing that, and the bigger and more entertainment value that became with fashion shows, you know, they left the salons and went into these big venues. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, there's a lot of photographers, and very tight spaces. There was a time at a fashion show in Paris where we were so tightly packed. This was kind of normal. You're very, very tightly packed, but we were so tightly packed that I was standing on a 400 millimeter lens case, which is, you know, it's a square case, but maybe, I don't know, 12 inches by 12 inches by probably about 2.5 feet, mm-hmm. you know, a little more than 2.5, under 3. And I'm standing on that vertically, you know, to be able to see, you know, and we were, you know, there was still jet lag and all that stuff. And I physically fell asleep standing on that camera lens box with a camera and that 400 millimeter lens on a monopod, because there was no room for tripods. The video guys had tripods because they had to, but still photographers weren't allowed to have tripods because they took up too much room, and it was self-policed by the still photographers. We wouldn't let anybody in. You know, you had to shoot from the side if you did. I fell asleep, but I did not fall because we were just that tightly packed. My knees were locked, which is the only thing that kept me from going down. But I remember my friend Stefan Nauer, who's a German photographer, was standing on my right. When the show started, he elbows me because he knew I was asleep. So he elbows me and just says, "Show starting." So I just started pushing the button, taking pictures. But it was, the whole thing was a race. You had to get from one show to the next as fast as possible to try to get as good a spot as possible to photograph in. You know, the closer you could get to the center, the cleaner the backgrounds were, the more the model was, you know, looking straight at you, and, you know, it's just the better photo. So yeah, it became a race. I've heard, you know, since I stopped going, that backstage got to be a bigger deal. So there was all of a sudden a lot of photographers backstage. I did a little of that when we had specific reasons for stories that they were writing when I was doing it, but there was hardly anybody out there. And I hated doing it because you had to leave, you know, the front stage spot, and, you know, might lose your spot if you know, somebody didn't keep it for you. I've heard today, in this day and age, there's a lot more going on outside the fashion show. Everybody's doing the Bill Cunningham thing. And it's not really as many photographers as there are bloggers. And they're just all out taking pictures of the people showing up for the fashion show. Nowhere near as many at the fashion show. It's what I hear. I haven't been, so I can't say for sure.
When you're in that more competitive environment, how does your goal set change? I mean, you're standing next to people that are all trying to get the best version of the same photograph, essentially. What are you thinking about in those moments of what your goals are?
Oh, my goal is, how can I get to the next show before everybody else does? Honestly, because you're not competing for the photo, because everybody's getting the same photo. What you're competing for is the spot, you know, the place you're shooting from. You know, if there's some room and somebody shows up late and it's a friend of yours, you know, and you can help them out, you know, you'll say, "Hey, you know, come get right in front of me or right next to me, or, you know, come here. This, you know, I got a spot for you." Because, you know, you might need that the next day and they'll do it for you. So, yeah, there is a little click, you know, they're definitely clicks that help each other, because you really, it's hard to do on your own by yourself. Having all the help you can get is really good.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, the good click, the more powerful click, I would say, what were the ones that the international crew that went to all three cities, you know, the Milan, Paris, and New York. We were all closer and helped each other whatever we could, to the extent that, you know, I mean, this may sound mean, but we referred to everybody else as tourists. You know, and I saw a lot of photographers coming from other newspapers, you know, both both internationally and as well as the United States. And, you know, everybody's like excited. Wow, I'm going to go shoot the fashion shows, take pictures of models, you know, blah, blah, blah. You never saw them again. They experienced it once and it was like, no, never again, never, not going back. So, yeah, people that stuck with it were, you know, a hardy breed. I was at a fashion show in Paris, a big one. Can't remember the what designer it was, but, you know, it would have been a Saint Laurent or Chanel or, you know, one of the big ones, because it was the large venue. And it was right after Richard Gere married Cindy Crawford. Mm-hmm. And he showed up to the shows. You know, she was working, but he showed up to the shows. And, you know, here we are, you know, it's way past time for the show to start and people are getting antsy, but they're waiting. You know, and the paparazzi are all still, you know, they're in front of the catwalk. They're so, you know, what we're waiting for is some celebrity. Mm-hmm. They're not going to start the show until the celebrity gets here. You know, in the back, we have no idea who it is. And, you know, then bam, all of a sudden, you know, Richard Gere comes walking in and, you know, this is heyday. And so, yeah, there's a sea of photographers in front of him. You know, his back is to us. And a sea of photographers in front of him, you know, with the flashes going off. And he's just standing there posing. And we're like, okay, well, this is part of it. We're gonna let them take their pictures. Well, you know, it went long enough that, you know, in the back, you know, we're very uncomfortable in where we are. Cramped in like that and standing on boxes and standing on little step ladders and, it's not comfortable. We, you know, we've already been there for maybe a couple of hours before this even started. And so all of a sudden, you know, everybody in the back starts yelling at him, you know, Richard Gere. You know, and he kind of turns around and notices for the first time, you know, he had to see a paparazzi in front of him, you know, photographers. And he turns around, there's an ocean of photographers, you know, behind him. You know, and of course, as soon as he turns around, everybody starts yelling, "Sit down." Nobody was interested in taking a picture of it.
Yeah.
You know, we're interested, let's get the show going because we got the next show to go to. You know, it's a long day. That's one of the big differences between what we were doing and what the paparazzi were doing.
Wow, that's so funny.
But both sets were there, you know, and both had a purpose there.
Right.
It benefited the designer, benefited the industry.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to come on the show and talk to me.
Oh, this was fun.
Friend of the show, welcome back anytime.
Thank you.
So thank you. Best of luck. And we look forward to seeing your future work once this virus thing dies down.
Thank you, Anthony. Appreciate it.